Smiling so broadly, and it was just his delight to invite us in to present this special moment of intimate bliss with him. I mean, it was one to one with him, just for a minute, or not even a minute, just a quick look, and it was just this bliss. And then we whisked out of the cabin. And everybody was really lit up. And so that's kind of the way things went. We were always in for a surprise, one way or another. And another day, we were called in the same way by cues. And Jane Haynes was in the line in front of me, and I saw what was happening. Baba was allowing each one to kiss his hand. And as Jane kissed his hand, I thought, my gosh, I don't want to kiss his hand. I don't know what that's all about. And I want to embrace him. And then my turn came, and he turns to me, just like he knew what I wanted, and he gave me what I wanted, and he gave me this wonderful, loving embrace. And I thought, how wonderful, Baba gave me what I wanted. And then I waltzed out of the cabin very happy. And I didn't get more than 10 feet when I said, wait a minute, I bet I missed out on something. There must be something to this kissing hand business. And I said, I'm darned if I know what that's all about, but maybe I would like to know what it's all about. And I said to myself, I wish I could know what it means, and I wish I could have appreciated it. But I was still happy, and the thought left me. I never thought of it again. Because Baba doesn't say, too bad you missed out, you didn't know. He doesn't do that. I mean, he just was gentling us along, really. And so one day, somewhere, and it seemed like a private moment, I don't even remember if other people were around or any of the circumstances. All I do remember is that I was with Baba, and it seemed like we were alone. He held out his hand, and I kissed it. And I knew what it meant, and I was grateful. Just like that. There's no explanation. He knew what was in my heart. He knew that I really wanted to know, and he gave it to me. I didn't make any effort. I couldn't. But I had the wish to know and the wish to be able, to be capable. I think it's interesting because sometimes we do feel that we're not capable to understand or to appreciate or to love in the way that maybe Baba wants us to. And that I found out, for me anyway, that the mere wishing and wanting to be able to somehow creates the possibility to have it happen. Anyway, that's worked out for me. Then still at Myrtle Beach, there's another little incident. We knew a family in town who came to meet Baba, and they brought their three children, and we had known the children too. And then the middle child, I think, had baked some cookies for Baba, and either she forgot to give them to Baba or didn't have the chance or what, and it seemed like her opportunity was gone. And somehow she connected with me, to me, with this. And so I thought, well, what are we going to do about this? And Baba was finished with the interviews or activities at the moment at the lagoon cabin. So I knew that Baba would sometimes go to the guest house, that at some time he would be coming. I forget quite the details of what time of day it was. But I thought, we'll go down the stairs, across the bridge, up the stairs, and over to the guest house. and we'll meet Baba over there when he comes in through the gates. And it's as though Baba knew that that's what we were going to do. Because sure enough, there he came along in the car and got out of the car and came in the gates. And there we were waiting for him. And we were keeping an appointment, an unspoken appointment. And the little girl had the chance to present these cookies to Baba. And he gave her a nice embrace. And it was a very special, private, intimate moment for this little girl. And that's kind of the way little things like that happened along the way. And I think those were the same cookies that Baba gave out to us in San Francisco at the Holiday Lodge on one of our last days. He was standing out in front of his door of his room and called us together. And we knew this was going to be one of the last times that either the next morning was, I think the next morning was when he was going to be leaving. And he was, you know, helping us get adjusted to this idea and having a few more moments with him and a time for him to be a little bit amusing with us. And he would hand out a cookie and almost drop it. And different little things like that. And with Beryl Williams, the black girl, he took the white powder from the cookies and plastered her face with the powder. And with Margaret Kraske, he played his usual gotcha game. When she wasn't looking, he'd grab her elbow or something and then look like that, and she'd look fast and they'd have this game going on. And so that there were these just little amusing touches to the very sweet moments of being with him. Now I got to get back with, let's go back to Myrtle Beach. I don't know which story to tell first, where to start again. But one story leads into another. This story ends, or is part of a story that continued into 1956. Oh, first I was going to tell this one. In 1956, 50 of us traveled from Myrtle Beach to Washington, D.C., to Los Angeles, to San Francisco. And I think it was in Los Angeles, we were all gathered in a room together with Baba. And Baba was talking about about India. And he said to so-and-so, "You must come to India." And he'd go like that, pound like that, "You must come to India." And then he was pointing to these people, you know, like Kitty, you know, you expect him to do that too. And various others, you sort of thought, I thought, well, of course he's going to point to them and invite them to India, that's fine. And I thought, okay, I didn't have any interest in going to India. And I was just watching what was going on, that he was making sure certain people were going to India, so what's that to me? And then to each one, he'd point to them and name them, and he'd go like that. And after a while, he got past 5, 10 people. And I began to think, hey, there must be something, too, that's going to India business. Well, a few more people went by, and I thought, well, maybe that's not a bad idea. And a few more people went by, and I thought, well, it's probably a good idea, after all. A few more people went by, and I thought, gee, I would like to go to India. Mm-hmm. A few more people went by, and I said, hey, I really want to go to India. And we're getting down to the end of the line here. And I'm saying, hey, I want to go to India. And so he finally got to me. And, And so, of course, we did go to India in 1962, and it was wonderful. he works wonders with our mental blocks. Since I've just mentioned going to India, I'll jump right over there now. We did go to India for the East-West Gathering, and most of the people went with obstacles. One thing or another stood in their way to going. All kinds of dreadful things. We traveled from Schenectady down to New York by car, had a flat tire, it was snowing. My mother had a slight heart attack. My name wasn't even on the manifest. Just odd things that, you know, are we going or we aren't going? And we said we'll believe it when we're on the airplane. Well, we actually did get to India. And so we stayed at various places in Pune and Babu. It was only 4 days, the East-West Gathering. And we were called to meet Baba first. First, the women were called first in the morning at Guru Prasad. And it was by small group, sort of. And I was linked up with Billy Eaton again, and she and I rode to Guru Prasad in a car together. And we mounted the steps and entered the hall. It's a large hall that accommodated 200 people or more. And Baba was at the end of the hall, seated on a beautiful green sofa. And only women were there. The Eastern ladies were there to one side. And Mara was, Baba was sitting here, and Mara was draped on the arm of the chair near Baba, like that, as each one was being introduced to Baba. And several women were already there of the Western group. And as we entered, Billy and I entered the hall, I saw Mani standing there in a beautiful green sari. And I knew she was going to call one of us first. And I thought, oh, I want to be first. And she did call my name first. And I feel like I must have run to Baba. I don't know whether I walked or whether I ran, but my heart just leaped out to be near Baba and to greet him. And he just looked up at me like, oh, he's so glad to see me. And he wanted to give me his love. And he held my face close to his. And he went, mmm. I mean, it was an audible sound. And I just was ecstatic. I just, tears and everything, and I just, through my blind tears, I just found a place to sit down. It was just so absolutely, so filled with love. And so each one came and was greeted by Baba. And each time each one was greeted by Baba, it was though you were being greeted by Baba again and again, and the flow of his love keep pouring on you. And while Mara was sitting like that, she was so much a part of it. She was with Baba giving that love too. It was just so, so very beautiful. And this was one of those occasions where only women were with Baba. And it was a very special feeling being only women with Baba. Baba was never effeminate, but I felt a feeling of all the finest attributes of womanhood were heightened. All the loveliness, all the beauty, everything that a woman stands for was being accentuated, so that we could be more aware of it and enjoy being what we are. And why I had that impression, I don't know if Baba was doing it deliberately, but that's how I have always felt on the few occasions where Baba had only women. It was absolutely delightful. And he was so sweet, and so more sweet and more tender and just more beautiful and just so precious. And later, when the men had their time with Baba, I wondered what Baba was like with the men.
Who interpreted Baba's gestures when he was with the women?
Mani. And so I asked my father, and he said, oh, he was more calm. He was calmer D, you know, slap me on the back kind of thing, you know, us guys together, you know. I can't imitate it, but. And so I suppose it was the same thing, men being men. I don't know the significance, but that's how I felt each time. And I think there's something special about it, really. So for 4 days, we spent 4 mornings together as Westerners inside of Guru Prasad. Excuse me. With Baba pouring out his love to us. But it was different in India from what it was in the United States. We were expected to be a little more grown up. And I think we saw Baba a little differently. There were stories and there were songs and things like that. But it was mainly this love flow that was always characteristic of being with Baba. Baba would ask different ones questions and things of that sort. You were there, Wendy. I don't know what's happening. And then in the afternoons, we would spend outside in the back where they had this huge pandal tent. And the Western women were in the front on one side, and the Eastern women behind them, and the Western women on the other side in the front, and the Eastern men on the other side. Behind them. And we were about 5,000 strong, seated there for like from 2 o'clock till 6 o'clock. And Baba was sitting up on the dais, continuously pouring out his love. And he was using these kinds of hand motions. And he would make, at the beginning, the Easterners were taking turns, first the women for a certain span of time, going up on the dais and embracing him slightly or garlanding him and having his darshan and coming down. And then the men would take their turn and go up. And that's how the afternoon went, for the most part. Each afternoon went with that. And over here in the background, there were Indian men with their Indian music. And it was our first introduction to Indian music. And we thought, wow, this is far out. And then then later these men came up on the platform and did a musical program. And then some other actors did a program. There were various other things like that. But one of the things was that when Baba was up there, he would have eye contact with different ones. And he was telling Ben Haman, don't fall asleep. And he was telling other people different other little things. And so there was a little humor in there too. Harry Kenmore was asked to recite the Parvardigar prayer. And maybe you've heard that when he says the Parvardigar prayer, you can hear it all the way back over 5,000 people, and that's the place to say it. And so that's how our afternoons were spent. And at the end of the day, Arti was being sung, and to me that was the most precious time, because it was our chance to sing to Baba and to give him our love more fully. being in India was seeing Baba more as God. In Myrtle Beach and in the United States, Baba was a more personal human God. But in India, he seemed more of a universal God. I'll just go back to Myrtle Beach for a minute here, and that is that in Myrtle Beach, when they had the men's program, the comedy program that you've probably heard about, at the close of it, the band struck up to begin the beginning, and Baba went into a mood of deep inner working, and he was brought out from the barn and onto the porch, and then down the stairs, and then later over to the main part of the center, and was placed before the in front of the lagoon cabin. We all walked over and stood at a respectable distance around him, and were just standing there, and all of nature was also participating. The frogs and crickets and birds stopped still, and we were all somehow participating in whatever was going on. And Baba was doing his deep inner work, and we didn't know what was happening, but there was a still hush over nature and in our nature. And at this time, I was behind some people, and once in a while I kind of get up like that a little higher so that I could look at Baba more. And one of these times when I stretched up to see Baba, from out of that mood, he looked up at me and flashed his glance at me. I went, like that. I was shocked. I went into a state of shock because while I knew Baba was God intellectually and accepted Baba as God intellectually, all of a sudden, the fact that he is God reverberated through my whole being. My gosh, whoever God is, whatever God is, Baba is God, really. And I was just in this, like, I know. And nothing mattered, nothing was there but Baba. And I just went, after that I went to my room and sat down, and I was just completely in a daze, completely wiped out with this utter, complete conviction that Baba is God. Then my sister found me and said, "Why aren't you coming to lunch?" And so I made an attempt to be normal and went to lunch, and because that's what Baba would have wanted me to do. But getting back to India, it was seeing God as a universal God as well as a personal God. And during the day it rained, one afternoon it rained. We know about that. And there was pandemonium, and there was kind of a rush. People thought they wouldn't get their chance to be with Baba. And the Western women were supposed to go up on the platform, and that was more of a rush. And I managed to get up on the platform. And then my mother asked me to find my sister, and I couldn't find her. And for a moment, I found myself standing behind Baba on the platform during this rush of excitement. And there was a tremendous power of Baba. The dynamic of power that was there, embodied in Baba, was stupendous. And here he is, sitting there, just calm as could be, holding this infinite power and giving it out, his divine love. The Lord of the universe sitting there, giving divine love, in command of the universe, giving divine love. It was just magnificent. But then I did move on. I don't know why. I did move on into Guru Prasad. And I decided to ask where the ladies' room is, because I had a call of nature. And Ronald came out from where the women's bedrooms were, and so I asked her. You see, Baba gives you these really powerful moments, and then all of a sudden, back into normalcy. That's the way he does things. So you don't lose your balance. So then there I was in Guru Prasad, and Rana says, come right over here. Went into the women's bedrooms, and there were all these clothes all over the beds. The Eastern women were emptying the closets. And we learned later that before going to Guru Prasad, Baba had asked the women to bring all your clothes, bring everything. And they were emptying their closets, and the Western women, whose dresses were sopping wet, were changing clothes. And that, then I realized, well, yeah, my dress is wet too. This looks like a good idea. And I found a blouse, and then it seemed like everything there was too large for me. And so I went into the next room looking for something to wear with this blouse, and I saw Mara come from her closet with an armload of clothes on her arm, and she was making sure somebody over here got just the right thing. And then she looked at me, and she's very particular about looks and everything. She doesn't miss a thing. And she looked at me, and she looked at this blouse, and she was sure that that wouldn't do. And she picked up this dress of hers, and she said, here. And it was a beautiful dress, and it fit me perfectly. And Mani even gave me a slip for it, and I was one of the last ones in there. So I finally went to the bathroom, too. And so when I came back out, I was one of the few who was wearing something that fit them. It looked nice. You know, the Western women with all their nice clothes and their Western hairdos and everything had wet hair and were wearing things that didn't fit them and so on. And so vanity went out the window, because here they are in front of 5,000 people, and Baba called them back up on the platform one by one for an embrace. He's working on all levels at all times. And as I was going down, I had my beautiful new red sandals that I didn't want to get full of mud, so I took them off, and before I took them off, I thought, oh, I'm going to get all these germs in my feet. And I thought, heck, I'm with Baba. If that's the way it's going to be, that's the way it's going to be. And also, just as I was stepping down, there was this little Indian woman who exteriorly had a very unattractive face. And if I were in my normal Western mode, I would have just ignored her. You know? That's the kind of person I was, I guess. But she looked up at me, and her eyes were so bright with Baba's love. And she said, Jai Baba. And I just turned to her and I said, yeah, Jai Baba. And we had a love exchange. And it got me past some of my limitations. So Baba's just, you know, one lesson here, one lesson there, one lesson there. Just like that. And another thing that impressed me about the East-West gathering that I'll come back to, first I'll go into another story about the Shaw family in the Delmonico Hotel in 1956. When we were the Schenectady group had been in the hotel, in Baba's room, meeting Baba. And then it was lunchtime, and all but our family left the room, and we were detained. And Baba moved over and sat into a chair, and we just kind of naturally, the five of us, sat down in a semicircle around Baba. It was over the lunch hour. We didn't even think about lunch. We sat down there, just so happy to have a few private moments with Baba. And we didn't even think that none of us were speaking, and Baba wasn't conveying any message to us. He was sitting there, pouring his love out to us. Just, okay, here goes. And it was like we were all ready for it. And you see, he had... It seems like Baba, the master at all things, knows when anyone's ready to receive his love and to what depth. And he even engineers or maneuvers, if you would want to call it that, people so that they can be in a position to be able to receive it. And I feel that that's what he did with the five of us simultaneously at that time. So that we were all prepared and ready to receive his rush and flow of love as he poured it into our hearts. And we were ready to open our hearts, receive that love, and empty our hearts, return with full measure all the love that he gave to us, not to hold it. As soon as he poured it into us, we pulled it, all our love and all his love, and offered it back. And it became a rhythm of the give and take of love. And it was a deep breathing, a physical breathing of love. And I've read somewhere that Baba said, "I am your very breath." And to me, this is a demonstration of his rhythm and of the breath of love. We lost track of time as we were so enwrapped at this total giving of love, filled in the fulfillment of it. Nothing held back, no barrier. Just that. And Baba was very, very happy. And he said, this is my food. Mm. And we had some more. Then after we stopped, you know, we didn't stop, but then he started having conversation with us, saying, "This is my food," and asking some questions about what we were doing and what we were to do, and other comments. And then at the close of this time, he gave us each a chocolate as lunch. It was just one of those unforgettable times. But I wanted to draw the parallel between that and the East-West Gathering, because here at the East-West Gathering were 5,000 people whose hearts were simultaneously prepared to receive his love and open up, and hour after hour share in the give and the take of love. To me, that was spectacular. I mean, who else but God could do that? And you know how people in an audience will fidget and do this and do that, but there were times when, especially at Arti, when we really were united in the oneness of love. And we had this opportunity of pouring our hearts out in Arti, it was, to me, the glory of God. It was more beautiful than anything I've ever experienced, is that chance to be with God and be with a mass of people and feel that unity in pouring out our love to him. It was so beautiful. Another time at the East-West Gathering was the last day that was so important to all of us, because it was about the last time we were to see him. We were all to say goodbye and come up for our last embrace. And we took our turns as each one just saw that when they were ready, they came up and took their turn. And I had decided that I was going to bow down to Baba, because the day before was the day the whole public was allowed to pass by Baba and bow down. He was sitting at the edge of the platform and they could come by. And the platform was so high that they didn't have to bend down, they just put their head down. And first, the Mandalay had this opportunity to bow down to Baba. And seeing them bow down, because they had not been allowed to do this before this time, and they knew what a precious moment this was. And it's very touching to see how each one did it. And then the general public had this opportunity to give and bow down to Baba. And Baba, on that day, the seating arrangement was reversed. The women were allowed to sit on that side and the men were on that side. And I was second row front center. And it was like Baba was doing this. And he'd look up at me every once in a while like, yeah, you know, you can do it too. You're going to get your chance. And so when it came time to say goodbye to Baba in the last embrace, I did bow down, and I found myself kissing his foot. It was just pure ecstasy. It wasn't really a goodbye, it was more of a hello. Because it was that much closer, that much more of being with Baba. He was revealing himself in his love form as we surrendered in his love, not knowing we were surrendering, we were just loving him. So I made my way back to my chair in this ecstasy state, and once again Baba doesn't allow me to enjoy it for very long. He turns it around again, and someone whom I knew not too well, but was one of the Westerners, came up to me, and I mean, I know it was obvious what a wonderful state I was in and all that, and why he said this, it was just startling. He said to me, will you quit worrying about money? Isn't that the most ridiculous thing anybody could say? And all I could conclude was that was Baba's last word to me. And there are occasions when I need to remind myself. So I think that was a special bonus. But that really wasn't the last time I saw Baba. Most of the Westerners had to go home, but we were traveling with Charles Purdom and were obligated to stay on a few days because Charles was working on the God-man and had to consult with Baba some more. And so we stayed a few days more, and that gave us the chance to see Baba at Bun Garden. And a few Westerners were there, and mostly Easterners were there at Bun Garden, around that big tree near the river. And they stretched out a big carpet, and Baba sat on that carpet. And that picture you may have seen where Baba's going like this. That's Don't Worry, Be Happy. And that's where that picture was taken at that time. And we knew we weren't seeing Baba, but as usual, Baba never let us cry when he was saying goodbye or we were saying goodbye. It was a chance to really come closer and really take in Baba for all time. And we sat there with Baba, and that's what was happening. And when it was time to go, it seemed like it shouldn't be happening. But he did get into the car, and the crowd gathered in front of the car and wouldn't let the car move. And the car inched along, and there was a great crowd around, and they all wanted to have a last touch or last contact with Baba. Me too. And I wanted to have a last eye-to-eye contact with Baba. And I thought, how am I going to do this? Everybody's over there and I'm way over here. And he'll never see me. I'll never be able to do that. So I crossed over on the other side of the road, thinking then I could get in there and get closer. And I was in a worse position. It was even more impossible. And my heart was, I was just beside myself because I was so desperately wanting this. And as usual, Baba gives us what our hearts desire. And either a touch or a glance or whatever. And he looked out and he looked up and he smiled at me. And that was it. So I didn't know then that would be the last time. But it's not the last time for feeling Baba. It's not the last time for feeling his presence and being with him. That's the best part. He does live in our hearts, and his love is stronger than ever and always with us. I have other stories, but I'll pause now for any kinds of questions.
I'd like to add, when you mentioned that you would, when you were going to see Baba, you ran into obstacles, and you mentioned one of the things that happened was Jean had a slight heart attack. How did you still make the trip? How did you know it was a heart attack, and what was that about?
Well, I don't think I can really go into very much detail about it, but we really didn't know whether she was going to make it. And but we decided to go ahead, and a cable was sent to Baba. And I packed up her bags for her. And she decided she could get up and go somehow, that she was going to tough it out. And she did. She didn't get a cable back from Baba until we got down to New York City. And at the airport, she was paged, and she received a cable from Baba. He didn't say, don't come. He didn't say, come. He said, now, she knows the exact word, so I don't want to misquote it. But it was something like, let my love run through your veins. Something like that. And that gave her the strength to carry on and to go. So even under the, you know, Baba.